Okay, welcome back. It's hard to believe it's Friday. It just doesn't seem like it. I don't know what day it is. It could be any day. This doesn't seem to get anything but crazier. Eric and I are here for all of you, wherever you are around this beleaguered planet. And I know in other countries you're seeing the same sorts of things we're seeing here. Lots of people, unfortunately, are checking out. And many have been hideously injured and wounded, maimed, butchered, is it. And why? Because the spike protein and the mRNA and especially the iron and the heme are causing horrific damage to the body, even though no one talks about it but us. And that's okay. Maybe they'll be forced to come around to it. We'll see. Hi, partner. You there?
Hi, Jeff. Yes, I'm here.
You sound bright-tailed and bushy-eyed as usual. Ready to go. All right.
Yep. We made it through another week.
Yeah, it's true. We made it through another week. Rand Paul and his now rather modestly famous wars with Fauci in testimony says that Fauci caused 7 million people to die, and we've caught him red-handed, and he won't get away. Well, Rand, I like the sentiment, but you're wrong on a couple of accounts. It's not 7 million people. It could end up being 3 or 4 billion people, 5 billion people, 13-plus billion injections of Fauci's, and he's involved with it, death shot, have been given to over 5 billion people. Okay? So I don't know where you come up with 7 billion, Rand, but good luck.
Now, 7 million.
7 billion. Thank you. The issue is that people don't understand. Fauci is not going to be made to swing in the wind. Oh, Biden will pardon him if that ever came to pass. And the chances of that happening are very, very small. The story, very briefly, Senator Rand Paul asserted Thursday that Anthony Fauci is directly responsible for funding dangerous research that likely killed millions of people and that he won't get away, as I mentioned. Okay, well, likely there is no public health figure who has made a greater error in judgment than Dr. Fauci, Paul declared. What the hell is he talking about? He didn't make an error in judgment. He did exactly what he was supposed to do and knew what he was doing and did it. And it has been deployed now. Paul goes on to say the error of judgment was to fund gain of research or to fund gain of function research in a totalitarian country. No, it's much worse than that. It didn't all happen in China. How about Chapel Hill? How about Toronto and other locations? Fauci funded research that allowed them to create super viruses that in all likelihood leaked into the public and caused 7 million people to die, Rand Paul declared. This is right up there with the decisions, some of them malevolent or military, to kill millions of people. Okay, we'll go along with that part of it. But I don't think Rand fully understands the dimensions, the dynamics, and the horror of what has been unleashed on this planet.
No.
So.
No, and you know, these injections are doing far more damage than that virus ever did or ever would have done.
He's hung up on the Wuhan virus, and it's not that. The plandemic was never the virus.
No.
That was the trick. The plandemic
exactly.
Was the injection.
Yep.
And Rand is just, he's ass backwards on this. You know, go for it. But Jesus, somebody straighten the guy out so he can at least do it properly before the pardons are granted. And like, don't think for a second Hunter Biden is going to be held up to account on anything. His old man will pardon him. He'll pardon himself too. That's the game. So anyhow. There you go. That's one of the top stories. There are many others. But most encouraging are two stories. We're going to play a short video. Dr. Peter McCullough has stepped forward on a program called The Vigilant Fox, hosted by Tanya Gaw, the founder of Action Canada, in which he says very important things out loud, okay? And we're going to play the video, and you'll be able to hear them yourself. In short, a quote, "It looks like the mRNA is transferring from the vaccinated to the unvaccinated." Well, don't forget the spike, all right? The S protein and the mRNA. Now, Erica and I have been projecting that if they have the ability to have shedding accomplished through the transmission of the spike protein, why wouldn't they continue and include the mRNA as well? And according to Dr. McCullough now, and there are papers to back this up, Moderna papers, Pfizer papers, that indeed the mRNA is being shed upon the unvaxxed. And they are, in essence, being vaxxed. You don't want the mRNA in you. That sets up the factory in your cells to produce the spike protein. All right, anything to add to this? And we'll play that video.
Well, you know, we have the evidence for this, partial evidence, back in March of last year.
It's nearly a year. Yes.
You know, with this preprint that subsequently vanished, but the title of it was Analysis of COVID-19 Vaccines, plural, reveals hidden URA-3665, which is most likely some sort of micro-RNA, which may have a cumulative toxic effect on the unvaccinated. That was March of last year.
We've been talking about this for, in 2 months, it'll be a year, essentially.
Year and a half. Well, the shedding became apparent, I want to say, maybe March of last year, yes. You know, and there was quite a bit of chatter about it. Maybe it was February, but March, it really became a thing. And it was undeniable that something was being transmitted, and it looked, at the very least, to be spike protein, because unvaxxed people were having many of the same clotting issues, bleeding issues, neurological issues that the vaxxed were having.
Exactly. And how could that be unless there was shedding? And that was our point. Something's being spread that is manifesting virtually the same results as being vaxxed. So,
right. But now, you know, Peter McCullough and his colleagues are just getting around to, I guess, taking it seriously.
Well, I wish they'd have been paying closer attention, but there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes, threats, quasi-threats. You never know what's going on.
Right.
Why these people hold off. Do they really not know? Can they be that uninformed? It's hard to say. But we were right up front with it here long ago. And those of you who have been with us knew all this. So now we have some manner, some form of an admission or a revelation that, yes, it's not just the S protein, the spike, it's the S and the mRNA that are being shed. And how are they being shed? Give us the vectors, real quick.
Basically through exosomes, which are little packages, fat globules, so to speak, a lipid-bound particle that contains the genetic material and or the protein and maybe some other things as well.
Right.
But they are being released through exosomes, which can be in the breath or any bodily secretions, skin, through the sebaceous glands, sweat glands.
Any body fluid, exhalation.
Essentially.
Understand the aerosolization of exhaling is spreading the spike protein and mRNA. And you people out there, we have implored you to at least put on a mask when you're around other people. You have no idea what their vax status is. We're going to call it 80% have been injected with at least one shot, some five, some six. And you know, if you've been listening, that the latest booster, the bivalent booster, apparently has ramped up the amount of shedding extraordinarily. These people are just throwing off stuff and exhaling stuff like there's no tomorrow. And for some people, there isn't. And they're doing it for apparently several weeks after getting the shot. Now, the shots are not a barn burner in terms of success yet. They haven't introduced enough fear, but now they've introduced money. And the communist Marxist stronghold of Massachusetts is offering $75 if you take that bivalent vaccine so you can get out there and do your part and shed all over everybody who's not vaxxed.
Just in time for Christmas.
Merry Christmas. All right. This is going to be the last Christmas for a lot of people. Sorry. I hate to say it. There is no joy in this work. This is hard work. And believe it, it does drain anyone, and us included. It's hard. And it's every day. And it's getting worse. And we talked about it long ago. Here's Dr. Peter McCullough making it quite clear that what we said long ago is now being generally recognized by a lot of people. Come on. It doesn't want to play. Hold on, I have to reload the page. Now we'll try it again.
What are the risks to the unvaccinated?
Okay. You know, there was a recent paper.
Right. Let me start this again. This is Tanya Gaw, and she quite clearly asks, what are the risks to the unvaxxed? Which is probably most of you listening. Here we go.
What are the risks to the unvaccinated?
You know, there was a recent paper. I just have it on my Substack. If you want to review it, if you go to the Courageous Discourse Substack, and the first author is Helene Benoon, a former INSERM scientist. INSERM is a leading research unit in France. And Benoon has summarized this. This is disturbing. It looks like the messenger RNA is transferring from the vaccinated to the unvaccinated now.
Enormous statement. Enormous. Not that we haven't made it before, but it's coming from Peter McCullough now, who is obviously, as you know, world-renowned. That is quite a statement. All right, onward.
And in a paper by Fertig and colleagues, the messenger RNA is found circulating in blood for at least 2 weeks, and the curves were not going down. That's as long as they looked. Rolkin and colleagues has found messenger RNA in the vaccinated in lymph nodes for months. It looks like the body's not clearing it out. And then a recent paper, this is the most disturbing, from Hannah and colleagues, JAMA, showed that the messenger RNA is in the breast milk of yes. women ill-advised who took the vaccine during pregnancy or afterwards.
Now, we know the spike protein is being shed. This is a blockbuster because it confirms what we've been trying to get everyone to understand. If you get the mRNA in you, that goes into the cell, a cell, many cells, if you get many of them, and I don't know how you could restrict the amount you take in if you're being shed upon, and those cells become factories to produce the deadly S protein, the spike, and it's turned loose. You have been vaxxed.
So it's now clear. I think the messenger RNA, that's the greatest concern, is could you actually take a vaccine inadvertently by close contact, kissing, sexual contact, breastfeeding? And it looks like the answer is yes. Now the question on the table is, how long do you wait for contact? No one knows. The vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines for short, they've never been demonstrated to actually leave the body.
They've never been demonstrated to actually leave the body. That means once you've taken an injection or been successfully transfected by shedding, you may have production of the S protein in your body for the rest of your life. And you in turn will be shedding on other people.
Yeah, there is some evidence for that.
All right. Come on, Peter. This is a glitchy little thing. Hold on, friends, we'll get it. 155. I'm going to have to reload the page again. Bear with us.
What are the risks to...
I'm moving forward to where I need to be. And okay. Here's close enough. Come on, Peter. No, let me do it again.
What are the risks to the unvaccinated?
You know, there was a recent paper. I just have it on my Substack. If you want to review it, if you go to the Courageous Discourse Substack, and the first author is Helene Benoon, a former INSERM scientist. INSERM is a leading research unit in France. And Benoon has summarized this. This is disturbing. It looks like the messenger RNA is transferring from the vaccinated to the unvaccinated now.
Let me see if I can move this forward and get it to play.
The vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines for short, they've never been demonstrated to actually leave the body. They look like they're permanent. As well as the spike protein that's produced after them. This is very disturbing. So it's hard to guide. I was saying, you know, 30 days refrain from kissing and sexual contact with a vaccinated person, but I'm now extending that to at least 90 days and conservatively maybe extended from a point forward. I know there's married couples and all kinds of personal implications there, but no, this messenger RNA looks like it's for keep. Every shot is accumulating in the body with no ability for the body to get rid
to
of it.
Remove it.
The vaccines, because they stay in the body so long, it looks like they do permanently install into the human genome through what's called reverse transcription. So this is disturbing that not only does the vaccines not get out of the body, but now they're changing the human genome. This was shown in a human hepatoma cell line. And so it's conceivable that two vaccinated people could actually pass the code for Pfizer and Moderna into the baby. Permanently. The government, as they developed these vaccines, they kind of rushed it through the final stages. There was no assurances that these were safe. There was no genotoxicity, no teratogenicity studies. Now, in autopsy studies, the spike protein produced from the genetic material is found in the heart. Bollmeyer and colleagues have shown it. It's found in the brain, found in the brain, Mora and colleagues. So I can tell you, everyone who's taken the vaccine has this material in their brain, their heart, their adrenal glands, reproductive organs. It's really a terrible thought. My heart goes out to people who have taken the vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a real blockbuster, and I hope you'll share it. It'll be up there in the archives after the program tonight. Comments on that? It's just shedding will vaccinate people. I guess I could say that.
You know, weren't we talking about this or predicting this 2 years ago?
Yes, ma'am.
As I recall, there was quite a bit of outrage that these things were being relabeled as vaccines.
Yep.
And all of these things were noted in the research with animals. In fact, whenever they did experiments with animals with this type of thing, they would have to make separate quarters, a separate housing for the animals that were transfected with this stuff so that they wouldn't risk contaminating the control group.
You couldn't be more
clear. So they knew about it. They knew about it, and this feigned surprise, shock.
Oh, come on. Just carny actors, that's all they are, just frauds. They knew. They waited 2 years. Now, here's McCullough, literally 2 years on, making this statement. All right, what's the significance of the timing here? 13-plus billion injections in over 5 billion people have been achieved, accomplished. And remember that 80% in this country that we look at, we use that as our baseline of injected population percentage, is now clearly injecting, and I'm using that in quotes, vaccinating, in quotes, with a bioweapon, the 20% who didn't take the shots if they hang around the vaxxed. That is a distinct possibility, and you cannot discard it.
No.
Go ahead and laugh, but good luck. It's a fact. These people, the vaxxed are able to vaccinate the unvaxxed by shedding with the mRNA and the S protein. This is really hideous stuff.
Yeah, it is. And now you know why there's this campaign out there in the alt news arena to convince people there's no such thing as contagion or viruses or whatever. Mix and mingle.
Well, when Erica started mentioning that the effort to mix and mingle people was clear and obvious,
obvious.
We made it crystal clear, and we're not tooting our horns here. We just dealt with the facts, and now we've got finally it's become so blatantly obvious that Peter McCullough, I guess he figures he doesn't have much else to lose, is saying it. So there you go. All right. Do you think now that shedding is an issue? Those doubters out there, I hope you've gotten off the fence. Wear your mask if you go out. Wash your hands. Wear gloves. This is not a joke. Don't shake hands anymore. Don't hug and kiss anymore. And if you have sexual relations, you better be damn sure that your opposite is you know what their vax status is, but you still don't know who they've been hanging out around or with and have picked up whatever. This is really dangerous stuff. And I think the most insidious and horrific part of this is that it was all thought out. They knew. This was all studied. They knew how they were going to pick up that 20%.
Yep. And it's working.
It's working like a charm, doing exactly what they thought it was going to do, what they programmed it to do, what the Department of Defense wanted it to do, and what Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca and J&J complied with. Simple. Now, J&J uses the adenovirus vector to get into the body and produce the spike protein. Is there any consolation in that for anybody? Now, I know the answer, but just rhetorically. Is there any consolation if someone got the J&J shot?
I think maybe if they had only one, and I'm basing that on what this naturopath, Patty Bartsch, had reported in her practice in terms of fertility for women. None of the patients that she has who have had the mRNA lipid nanoparticle injections, being Pfizer, Moderna, have had their fertility restored. By that, I mean regular menstrual cycles. She did have success with the one woman who took one J&J, and this is a young woman, college-age woman, who was forced to take it to attend her college classes. Her period was irregular or absent for the better part of a year, and through her healing protocols, this woman is now menstruating again. But it's not looking good for the ones that took the mRNA.
Got it. Okay. All right.
So the adenovirus, that is a virus. It's a replication incompetent virus, meaning it's not supposed to copy itself.
Not supposed to.
Who
do you trust?
And so it's only supposed to go into the body, transduce the cell, get it to produce the spike protein, and then that's end of story. There are situations where that may not be the case, because even though they've removed the genes that would allow this chimeric virus to replicate, this virus can pick up the genes it needs to do that from the resident adenoviruses that typically people harbor And they are very, very common. In fact, the adenovirus is so common that it's considered probably a natural component, permanent resident of someone's virome. So it's conceivable that we have a new, maybe more than one, new adenovirus out there that is endowed with the ability to produce a spike protein in some way.
Yeah.
The other possibility is that the various recombination events can occur with different viruses that people harbor. The viruses often will exchange genetic components.
They swap genetic stuff all the time.
Yes, if they infect the same cell and they're present at the same time, and they can do that. So who knows what's out there right now? The frightening thing about an adenovirus bearing a spike protein, though, is that the adenovirus is not very easy to neutralize. It can live in the environment for 3 months.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough.
It's very tough. Yes, it's not one of these ones that has a lipid membrane. So it's very hardy in the environment. It can survive in water.
On the handle of a grocery cart?
Yes.
On a steering wheel?
Yes.
No joke. This is not, there's no paranoia here. These are facts. This is hard science.
And there was some chatter last year that the Sputnik coronavirus or COVID-19 vaccine was not sufficiently attenuated and was replicating. And they also used the adenoviral vector.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out there, too.
All right. I hope you'll listen to this program a couple of times and absorb it. Dr. Ryan Cole has just done an interview with Ask Dr. Drew. And I don't know anything about Ask Dr. Drew, but Eric is going to tell us in just a moment. But I want to say that I am very proud of Ryan Cole. He did leave one very important critical part out of what you're about to hear. However, he has assembled almost all the key things that this program has presented going on nearly 2 years. He has put it together really brilliantly. It's all there. And for all of you longtime listeners, you'll be familiar with many of these things. But this is a mainline MSM caliber program. Ask Dr. Drew. Tell us a little bit more, just real quick. Then we got to jump in this.
Yeah, he's had a presence in mainstream media for, gosh, a number of years now. I never really followed him, but I knew the name, and people that watch mainstream news will be familiar with him. So this is sort of a turning point that someone of his prominence has agreed to open Pandora's box here by interviewing Ryan Cole on his program. And revealing the truth about what's going on with people who have taken the injection.
Okay. All right. Let's get right into this. This is Dr. Ryan Cole. And so many times we've heard him talk, and you just knew he was holding things back. You just sensed it. He wasn't ready to go all, and he has gone all the way this time, with one exception, which we will explain after we hear this. I may stop it a few times to get Erica's comments, but here's Dr. Ryan Cole on the Ask Dr. Drew program.
But if we summarize so far, and I'm going to, part of my job is to make sure that we don't get so far into the technical weeds to lose those folks who don't have science backgrounds. But so far we said we knew that COVID was associated with this spike protein that by itself is toxic. It is what caused clots in those people who contracted COVID and had clots. They develop a vaccine that induces you to produce those precise toxic spike proteins and with no off switch. Unlike when you get the virus and you will eliminate it with a vaccine, you now have the genetic roadmap or instruction manual to make these in perpetuity, perhaps. We don't know for how long because those studies were never done. So when you get vaccinated, you now are going to produce the toxic spikes. And furthermore, they're going to be produced in essentially every organ system in the body, despite what we were told. They won't stay in the deltoid. Furthermore, because of the nature of the stains that you used that were available, you were able to determine the difference between spike proteins that occurred from the virus versus spike proteins that occurred from the vaccine. And to differentiate,
right.
That, okay, so far you now have become, if you're vaccinated, you're now a little factory producing gobs of toxic proteins in every organ system in the body. Go from there.
And I want to clarify, to just take some fear away from some individuals. The vector with the J&J and the AstraZeneca is an adenoviral vector, and you're starting with complementary DNA, not an mRNA. And so because of that, you don't get the breakdown. It produces a high amount of spike for a set period of time. We know from the 1980s, 90s, that gene-based studies with adenoviral vectors caused a lot of clotting. So there were clotting problems with that one for sure, and some antibodies in the blood that also induce clotting, platelet factor 4, antiphospholipid antibodies, other things in the body that will induce clotting from that vector. But you don't get the replication for the same period of time with mRNA vaccines.
Right.
I had some sort of,
I don't know if it was thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura or what. I had all the signs of a transverse sinus thrombosis. I woke up with a raccoon's eye and was sick as hell.
I saw that.
And made it through. But that's what you're talking about. So there it is. There's my raccoon eye.
Yeah.
So keep going, Dr. Cole. Move us forward.
Yeah. Now, we'll move forward real quickly here, and I won't be too nerdy. I'll try to be a little more layman's here. So if we jump onto, there we go. So it's in the brain tissue. Dr. Drew had a great question. Is it in the gray matter? Is it in the white matter? Where in the brain? Wherever the lipid nanoparticle distributes, and it does get through the blood-brain barrier, and we know S1, the spike gets through as well. So it'll follow the small capillaries and leak into whatever tissue it wants to. Okay, next slide, please. Now, this is the aorta. This is something that's unusual. Usually, you'll see this in genetic conditions where the aorta ruptures. And you can see on the top, that's the autopsy tissue. On the bottom, all those dots, that's inflammation. On the right, that's spike protein, literally causing the lymphocytes to chew a hole in the aorta. This is the biggest blood vessel in your body coming off your heart. When that ruptures, you're gone in minutes. So that's just another example of what deposited spike protein and the induced inflammation can do. So next, please. This is just an example of how prolific the spike can become once it lands in a tissue. So that big circle in the middle is an artery inside your spleen. And all those brown dots and all those splenic cells, that's a lot of spike protein. And so we know the spike can circulate in the body for a long time. Traditionally, in vaccine injury from other shots, they say most injury occurs within 2 weeks. However, with these gene-based injections, the spike is persisting for a long time, and it's produced in large quantity. Dr. Ogata at Harvard showed it was circulating for a month. Dr. Bonsall in the Journal of Immunology showed it was circulating in exosomes in the blood for up to 4 months. So we have spike protein persisting in the human body for a long time. Now, in some immune-suppressed patients, virus persists for a long time as well. So I'm not throwing one or the other under the bus. I'm just saying this is a scientific observation. So going on to the next one, this is what's concerning. Okay, so this is a lymphoma, a cancer of the lymphoid cells within the stomach lining. Now let's look at the next slide. All of those B cells are stuffed with spike protein. The spike protein binds to a gene in our body that's called the guardian of the genome, the P53 tumor suppressor gene. We know from in silico studies that the spike will bind there. It also binds to a breast cancer gene known as BRCA and ovarian cancer gene known as BRCA. What does that mean? Well, I made the observation that there's an uptick of some unusual cancers that I've been seeing. But this, I think, this should just at least open the door to other pathologists and universities to say, well, we should maybe go back and look at some of these unusual fast-spreading cancers in young patients that we normally don't see. Is there spike protein? Is it binding to that receptor? Why is the body doing things that we haven't seen on a population level before? So, again, I'm just putting it out there. These are things that are scientific.
have been observed. These are observations. These are scientific methods. Others need to continue to repeat these.
Hey, and let me interject here with if I can interject for a second here with regard to these cancers, Dr. Cole, you are certainly not the only one seeing these. There's been a significant increase in new onset cancers, particularly in young people, and a resurgence of cancers that had been deemed in remission. There was just a letter, a very compelling letter written to the British Medical Journal by a well-known British oncologist named Angus Dalgleish, who wrote that he said, please stop these. We are seeing massive uptick in colorectal cancers and in 44 other classes of cancers, particularly in young people. So we need some explanation. And while you and I cannot say with surety, as we sit here today, that these are a direct result of COVID vaccination, we certainly are obligated, I think, to have that robust, vigorous debate. And somebody sure as heck should be investigating these and saying what's causing it, because the things you are bringing up with regard to the binding of the spikes to these different receptors on certain well-known means. One of the great advances in cancer was our ability to define receptors and therefore have targeted therapy. A receptor for breast cancer, a receptor for colorectal cancer, a receptor, you know, for ovarian cancer. And now we have spike proteins that are binding to specific receptors and allowing tumors to grow unimpeded.
There's your turbo cancer. In guests, if you look under Jeff and Erica, the link there will take you to this particular video. It is queued to start at about 29 minutes, so pick it up right there. You can look at it after the program, share it. It is there, and it will be in the archive as well. All right, here's Dr. Ryan Cole responding to Dr. Kelly Victory. That's her name. Hold on.
And that's the important thing, is there's at least a dozen mechanisms that the spike can induce in those cancer pathways. And that's, you know, my scientific question and concern, what I've been observing. T-cell suppression, your immune system keeps cancer in check. All of us have some atypical cells right now. Your immune system knocked them out. Interferon is critical for fighting off other.
I have to stop it there because I want those of you longtime listeners, I think you'll remember that Erica was talking about interferon a long time ago as being a crucial anti-cancer function of the human body's immune system that is taken out by the spike protein. Correct?
Correct. Yes, it is.
Okay.
And that's part of the transfection process to downregulate the interferon response.
It sure did.
Viruses, as well as for fighting off cancer, especially type 1 interferon. The spike protein suppresses that in our cells. The spike protein damages our mitochondria. It can get into the mitochondria and inhibit the breathing of your cell, the energy of your cell, the ATP. So every cell in your body has these little factories making energy for you all day long. The spike protein impedes that. Great papers by Dr. Clough and Abramovich. So, and those are the tip of the iceberg. And then certainly microclotting, you know, can cause choking off of tissues, and cancers do like oxygen depleted environment.
Okay. The mitochondria is impeded by the spike protein body-wide. Microclotting also causes a loss of oxygen to cells. That's why so many people report absolute fatigue. They've got no energy. They're wiped out. And you just heard the explanation why. It's a spike protein. But I haven't been vaccinated. Have you been working around people who have? Well, yeah, I work in an office Monday through Friday, and most everyone in it has been vaxxed. Well, dear friend, whoever you may be, or in the supermarket, or wherever you are, if you're in a closed air environment, it is full of spike proteins, and you are inhaling them. It's that simple.
Yep. You know, the other thing it does...
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you.
No, I was just going to say, but probably the most immediate effect of spike protein exposure is the microclotting.
You mean instant, right away.
Yeah, so, you know, when your blood is thick and clotted, you're not carrying oxygen very well.
Remember Nurse Ann, every single person she has drawn blood on who's been vaxxed has black blood. It has no oxygen to speak of. And we'll explain more about that in a minute. Here's Ryan Cole.
And I could, you know, I won't get into the weeds on it. That could be another long, long lectures. But you're right. It's all these things added up into one that it's all of a sudden with what's new. Well, there's a new product that's never been used on humanity before that has plenty of plausible mechanisms, plenty of proven mechanisms. And yet the scientific questioning, the endeavor to say, hey, there's a signal. We need to look into the signal. We need to fund this.
Well, just for me, out of curiosity, what the tumors you've been seeing? Was it like a Burkitt's or something?
Interestingly, and there is an increase of Epstein-Barr virus, both after COVID and after. And Burkitt's is driven by Epstein-Barr virus. That's a B-cell lymphoma that tends to be driven by Epstein-Barr virus. And interestingly, in about half of the long-haul patients and COVID vaccine-injured patients, they do have reactivated Epstein-Barr virus. So I encourage clinicians, whenever they have that fatigued patient post-vaccine or post-COVID, check the Epstein-Barr virus titers to see if it's reactivated. My first signal was in women's health. I saw an uptick in endometrial cancers. That was the one that first concerned me. And then I do a lot of skin pathology, and so melanoma in a lot younger patients. And what was fascinating, especially after shot two or three, was the activity of growth of the tumor. So we measure how the cells are dividing and at what rate. And it was dividing at, these tumors were dividing at far higher rates. I've been doing this for 26 years. I've seen 500,000 patients in my career. You kind of know the patterns. And when you see something different, you're like, gosh, that is a lot of cell activity in this tumor compared to what I've been seeing. And it's in like Dr. Victory said, in younger cohorts. And that becomes a concern as well.
And that's why we're seeing people who go in, they've been shot up, and they're diagnosed with cancer. But it's not early onset. It's stage 4 cancer. They're near the end of the line by the time they figure it out. This is so diabolical.
Again, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus, but this is an industry that has something new. And this, all of these things are the kind of things we should have done long before a rollout of something experimental on a large population.
All right, so I keep throwing you off the blood clot. So back to the clots.
No, let's get to the clots. No. I'm more freeform like this. So, I mean, I can get on stage and do a presentation, but we can jump a couple slides forward. Let's look at those clots because, you know, there's been some sensational videos, and unfortunately, I didn't have any editorial power and didn't know I was going to be in one. I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, here we are. And so I can dispel some of the controversy if I can. So, yeah, let's go ahead and jump a slide or two, Caleb.
These are very important slides that he's showing, so I urge you to click on the video, on the link, and guess, or watch for it in the archive on the right-hand side. Dr. Ryan Cole, he's showing some extraordinary images here.
Here we are. So people say, oh, you know, these clots aren't real, you know, that's all made up, whatever. People are confabulating. These are from living patients. So these patients, fortunately, are still with us. So I have some surgical colleagues around the country that have seen an increase in their patients, thankfully done the scans, found them, and extracted them. So these thick fibrous clots are in vivo as well. These are in living patients. The interesting tube of blood on the right, this was a patient from my colleague, Dr. Burkhardt in Germany, and she had 3 shots. Whenever it would get cold, her fingers would start to hurt, kind of a Raynaud's phenomenon. They took a tube of blood, set it on the counter, and little fibrils started to form. They spun it down, and the material within this spun down big nugget there is the same as what we're seeing in the clots. So we'll go slide forward. And this is what it looks like. It looks like just this pink amorphous material. Well, that's fiber and it's reticulin. It's a bunch of amino acids. But more importantly, there's a material that the body doesn't break down very easily called amyloid. And you may hear about amyloid in Alzheimer's disease and plaques in the neurons in the brain. That's what we call a beta-pleated sheet amyloid. There are different types of amyloid. But the problem is the body doesn't easily break down amyloid. Our body can break down fibrin and clots, and you'll form a clot after scraping your arm or knee or whatever, and eventually your body remodels that area. And because we have enzymes that say, hey, you know, there's a clot, it's in the way, let's remold it, put some new vessels in, you know, all done, good to go. However, this type of proteinaceous material doesn't get broken down easily by the body. I don't want to scare everybody and say, gosh, everybody that has, you know, the shot is going to have this. No. No, the good news is most people are fine. However, from a scientific point of view, you can't find what you don't look for. So early on, the agencies and Fauci encouraged people not to do autopsies. So you're not going to find if you're not looking. The morticians that started seeing these, they were getting, when a body comes in and they have to preserve it, they cannulate large vessels, they put their needles in large vessels, they started getting back pressure that they hadn't experienced before. And there are one or two that have spoken out, but I know of about another 50 that are seeing the same, but again, want to keep their jobs. So they don't say anything. But when we look at these clots under the microscope, this is what we see. We'll go another slide forward here. Now, this is interesting. So here's autopsy tissue. This is a thicker clot within a larger lung vessel. And all that brown in the middle, guess what's in the middle of that? Spike protein. And again, it's binding to those little receptors we talked about. And Dr. Pretorius did a brilliant study where, the one from Dr. Reza Pretorius, South Africa, where she showed that you can take the platelets out of the blood and put the spike protein in, and it will cause proteins to clump together in the absence of platelets. So this is really unusual in clotting mechanisms. I ran one of the busiest clotting clinics in the world at the Mayo Clinic for a long time, and just understanding all the factors that go into form a clot. To see something like this in a protein that will do this in the absence of other things that are usually necessary for a clot is very unusual and, again, concerning. Do I want to alarm people? No, I don't want to alarm people. Do I want people to be aware? Do I want my colleagues around the world to study this? Absolutely. So we'll go on to the next one here. This is just an example of the postmortem clots. And, yes, they're long and they're very fibrous, and that fibrous aspect of there's no, you know, nano chips and wires and all this crazy stuff you hear on the internet. I think that's just all tinfoil scaremongered. But what there is unusual amounts of collected proteins. There are unusual combinations of proteins that make these very difficult for the body to dissolve. We'll go on to
and
the next
correct
one.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Let me just if. We keep referring to these, or people have referred to them as blood clots, these, you know, foot long or yard long, quote, mm-hmm. blood clots. You're talking about what's in there. Fibrin is, you know, kind of amyloid. But if I'm correct, they also are devoid of those things that we normally associate with blood, meaning there isn't hemoglobin or potassium or iron, the normal components of blood. They have a very different texture. If you roll a blood clot around in your fingers, it essentially will dissolve. If you roll these around, they have a very different texture, but they are devoid of typical blood components, correct?
And let me pile on a little question on the heels of that. And are they the same in postmortem as in somebody who's you're finding these in a living person?
No. And I've done about 600 autopsies earlier in my career, spent a month in a medical examiner's office as well. Postmortem clots tend to be like a thick red jelly. And like right. Kelly was saying, you can squeeze them, you can kind of roll them around and just break them apart. That's the uniqueness of this. These are like rubber bands. And I do kind of want to dispel a little bit of what you mentioned, Kelly, because they do house normal blood elements. So they do have the okay. fibrin you would see in blood. You do have some of the okay. normal clotting proteins. It will entrap red blood cells. It will just break them apart. That's the uniqueness of this. These are like rubber bands. And I do kind of want to dispel a little bit of what you mentioned, Kelly, because they do house normal blood elements. So they do have the okay. fibrin you would see in blood. You do have some of the okay. normal clotting proteins. It will entrap red blood cells. It will entrap white blood cells. So those elements are within it. The unusual aspect is the rest of the composition of this long fibrous clot is that amyloid-like material with some mixed sugars, glycoproteins mixed in. So it's the difference of being used to seeing a normal clot, having that part of it there, but this addition to it that makes it, you know, elastic and odd. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask another quick question on the heels of this? I've had this very distinct instinct all the way along, as we've learned about this illness, that there's a significant endothelial pathology of some type, both
100%
with
right.
the vaccine reactions and with COVID. I've almost, you know, all the microvascular stuff in the brain, I'm convinced is really something happening in the endothelium triggering clot. Is there anything about what you're describing with the vaccine that sort of either evidence for or theoretically in your own mind that fits with that theory?
I think that COVID itself and injury from the spike protein from the injections is one and the same pathology. I think you're absolutely right. I think the primary disease is a system-wide endotheliitis, and that means inflammation of the lining of the blood vessels. And there
sense.
Are so much binding to that ACE2, to that CD147 that we mentioned earlier, and then these induce... yes, inflammatory pathways, cytokine pathways, but also, and most critically in you know this aspect of the conversation, the clotting pathways.
Okay, I have to stop there. Now, it goes on a little further. And the one thing that Dr. Cole does not mention, and this is essential to understand, is that the spike protein destroys the red blood cells by separating the hemoglobin, or heme, from the iron. It's the iron. Unbound iron in the system, in the bloodstream, goes everywhere. It is highly toxic, as is the heme, by the way. So you've got a functional red blood cell carrying oxygen throughout the body. All of a sudden, it has been broken in half, cleaved in half, destroyed by the spike protein. And what do you have? Two toxic unbound substances suddenly flooding throughout the body. I'm keeping it real simple. Erica?
Yeah, it's interesting that the CD147, this receptor that he mentioned that's present on the lining of the endothelium, is also present on red blood cells. And there are also two other receptors, at least two other receptors on red blood cells that the spike protein can bind to. So I don't know why nobody is talking about the red blood cells being a target of the spike protein. You know, if the red blood cell isn't destroyed, if the hemoglobin doesn't separate, or the heme doesn't separate from the iron, at the very least you have a misshapen blood cell that, you know, it's almost like sickle cell or maybe a thalassemia, where the red blood cell is completely compromised in its ability to carry oxygen. And because it's misshapen, deformed, it can't get into these smaller places to...
capillaries.
Yeah, which is only one red blood cell wide.
Wide.
So if that blood cell can't squeeze itself, and it does need to squeeze to get in there... you know, those organs and tissues that are fed by that capillary bed essentially are starved of oxygen and will die or become cancerous.
Cancerous. Very important. We're going to talk more about this next time.
I just want to add, too, you know, between the heme and the iron, these two things on their own create a lot of havoc in the body. And as we were mentioning, I think on Wednesday, the body does have mechanisms for degrading heme. It must be degraded because on its own it's very toxic. But when that pathway is exceeded and you start to get a buildup of heme, nasty things can happen, not the least of which is cancer. And there is a very strong association of high levels of heme in the body, free iron, and endometrial hyperplasia, and also cancer. So these issues that we're seeing with women having these overgrowth of the uterine lining, horrendous clots, could quite possibly have something to do with this heme pathway and this buildup of free iron.
All right. That's the only thing that Ryan left out. He knows about it, but he did leave it out. We'll talk more about this on Monday. We got to run. Thank you, Erica. That was quite a lot of fascinating information that again,
well, Ryan did most of the talking.
He did. He was there. But it's all material that we've covered here for a long time.
And yeah, he does a good job at presenting
job. It. Oh, yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, thank you. Talk soon.
Okay.
Great
thank
job.
Thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. All right, we have to pause, and we'll come right back with more in just a few minutes. Hang on.